Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the country. This is the show that I really get giddied up for on Saturdays. It's been picking up steam. So blessed to produce this, and I can feel God taking this thing and running with it. It's a Doc Talk podcast out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, hosted by a brother, a mentor, a friend of me, Dr. Greg Roscoe. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing about 2,500 miles to the west in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. 60 minutes goes quicker than Dan Rather's 60 minutes. But if you happen to miss it, catch it on the blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay that red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, more of him, less of me, the threes, Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And, boy, you are bringing another great guest in this show that just keeps picking up steam each and every week, my friend.
Well, thank you again, Mark. Introductions are always super and very flattering. You can get a hold of me at gjrmd308outlook.com, and I do get a lot of emails regarding the show and the topics as well as what our viewers are interested in. You know, today we have kind of a revisit on a company called Inspire, and it has to do with one disease entity called sleep apnea. Another term of it is obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA. And we've talked in the past about this and a new therapy that we've got an excellent speaker with today, and that's Geralyn White, who has a very impressive title, by the way. She's Principal Academic Development Manager at Inspire. And, Geralyn, you've been there for several years, correct?
I have, almost 10 years now.
And you've seen, you know, development of this product and seeing how it's handling so many clinical situations and really improving patients' lives, correct?
Correct. We have come a long way, and we've treated now over 50,000 patients.
My God. You know, just to review a little bit for our audience, you know, if we talk about sleep apnea, and, you know, again, we can use the initials OSA. Now, that's a sleep disorder. That what happens is the airway collapses during sleep, and the airway is referred to the soft palate, the uvula area, the base of tongue, the tissues in the throat. And it'll lead to a complete or a partial cessation in our breathing, which is very disruptive to our brain and our system. In the past, you know, we've had people complain about, again, a myriad of symptoms, daytime sleepiness, loud snoring, waking up your partner, having choking, gasping, insomnia, lack of concentration, changes in moods, morning headaches. It's a variety of symptoms that occur if we do have sleep apnea. And, you know, in the past, kind of the current gold standard along those lines was something called CPAP, central positive airway pressure. And that's a gadget that you would wear a mask and have the appropriate oxygen pressure apparatus that would provide pressure into the upper airway and prevent the soft tissues from collapsing. And, you know, some people can tolerate it, some people can't. And, again, ongoing with that, we have many, many people that have tried to use it but just can't, and they're looking for other alternatives. And this is where the Inspire company has come along. And, Geralyn, you know, we can sure start to talk about how this evolved. But basically, you know, it's a matter of, we call it the 12th cranial nerve. And it's a matter of going in, and it's a stimulation approach to this nerve that's in the tongue, and this nerve, when stimulated, stiffens the tongue, but also helps to protrude the tongue as well as the soft palate, it allows it not to obstruct. Do I have the right take on this, Geralyn?
That's right. Inspire is an alternative to CPAP, oral appliances, or any other surgery that you as a physician might offer for obstructive sleep apnea.
Sure.
Doesn't require a mask or a hose. It's underneath the skin, and it's done by an outpatient procedure.
That's excellent. And, you know, I have had the opportunity. I have been trained to do this, and currently I am actively doing this procedure. And we've been relatively successful in getting good results, even though it's a little bit early on in my experience with this device. And, Geralyn, you know, with regard to just talking about this Inspire, you know, who qualifies for this Inspire? You know, who are, you know, what's the sweet spot, so to speak, for patients that would want to have this done? Who are we going after?
So patients who can't use or choose not to use a CPAP, whether it's for work-related, travel-related reasons, women who live alone who don't want to wear a mask, you can't wear a mask because you're claustrophobic, any type of reason like that, then they come to see you as a physician who specializes
sure.
in sleep apnea treatment options. We want to look for a patient with a BMI under 40. But BMI is something that the physician is going to evaluate on a case-by-case basis because of the fact that it's more of your structural anatomy versus your actual weight and BMI. We also want to look at a sleep study. We want you to have a recent sleep study to find out how many times you stop breathing per hour, which is called AHI, apnea hypopnea index. So that number will show on a sleep study, and then the clinicians will review it, and we want that number to be between 15 and 100. And that's the number of times you stop breathing per hour. So when we look at that number, those are patients with moderate to severe sleep apnea that need a treatment option that then they would qualify for Inspire. And then once they come see you, as you know, Dr. Roscoe, you will evaluate them. And if they qualify based on those standards, you will take them into the operating room for an outpatient procedure. It's a 10-minute procedure. It's called a drug-induced sedated endoscopy, and you're going to look at the patient's airway. We want to see how the patient's airway collapses because the way Inspire, the device itself works, it's a mechanical function that is going to open up your airway when you are sleeping, and we want to make sure that it's going to be appropriate for you based on your anatomy in your airway.
Excellent. You know, that is all correct. That's how we do it overall. You know what I wanted to tell the listeners also, you know, with regard to the patient population, you know, globally that have this severe mild to moderate sleep apnea, currently as far as the literature, there's approximately 425 million people worldwide that have a problem, you know, with this moderate to severe apnea or obstruction. So it's a big problem. I can just say a few things, Geralyn, here also. You know, the people that tend to have a higher prevalence are Afro-Americans. They tend to have a higher preference for this apnea versus our white, you know, white Americans and white people throughout the world. Asian population is very similar to what we as Americans have for this as well. And, you know, we're finding that people in an older age group, usually 50s, 60s, 70s, typically males, and people who are somewhat obese, tend to fall into the categories of having sleep apnea. And, you know, as far as some of the words, Geralyn, we just mentioned, you did mention BMI. BMI is something called Body Mass Index, and this is a measure that your healthcare provider can do. It's looking at your height, your weight, putting into a ratio and formula, and then coming up with a number. And again, this is all done with computerization when one walks in the office. And again, as you mentioned, BMI is very important. We usually like to see that, at least currently, Geralyn, we've been working with the 30s, 31, 32. I don't know if you did extend the indication to under 40.
And actually, the BMI is a reference point. It's not an indication. So that's a physician decision based on patient qualifications. But yes, the FDA has granted us 40 and below to be, you know, you can take a look at those patients to consider them for therapy.
Yeah, and, you know, just talking about it, if one is slightly obese, and let's say their BMI, of course, is high, then overall it's possible that we can start some type of a weight reduction program to decrease their weight and get them into that range, which I think can be very helpful in their overall health. But losing a little bit of weight there does change the BMI. You know, the other situation I think Geraldine alluded to was something called a DICE, a drug-induced surgical endoscopy. And if I may expand on that, Geraldine, if you don't mind, you know, that's like step one. When we get these patients in, we're looking to see if they would qualify to have this implant. It's where we take them to the OR, and we do sedate them, and we give them medication to make them sleepy, very relaxed, and without putting a tube in their throat. And again, we watch how they sleep, and then, of course, many of them would start snoring very loudly. And, you know, prior to that, we actually take a scope, a fiber optic scope, and place it into the nose where we examine the nasal structures to look for obstruction. But also we look into the back of the throat, looking at the soft palate as well as the tongue and the size of the throat. And, again, what we're looking at, as Geraldine alluded to, is that we're looking for a certain direction of obstruction. And that direction, so to speak, is, are the tissues collapsing in a front-to-back manner? And, indeed, if that's what we're seeing, then we know that this hypoglossal nerve implant should help them dramatically. If it does not look like that, and we're getting tissue collapsing, and we call it in a circumferential manner, then indeed the hypoglossal nerve stimulator will not solve their problems. And that's kind of the standard that we use, correct, Geraldine?
Correct.
And, you know, once we have that information, then we do proceed with, again, the insurance. We have to get insurance clarification, all of this, correct, Geraldine, and get them to go ahead and get pre-authorized before we can proceed to do the actual implant, correct?
Correct. Inspire is covered by Medicare and commercial payers, but we always do a prior authorization so that the patient knows ahead of time that that procedure is going to be covered by their insurance or by Medicare.
Yes, which I think is very important. And a lot of people are very concerned, you know, doing something like this, and again, making sure that, you know, they do have coverage. You know, if I can, Geraldine, I mean, you teach this as well. You know, with regard to the procedure, after we've done the DICE, after we've looked into their airway and we've seen the tissue collapse and they qualify, we then go ahead and prepare them for surgery. And the surgery itself, and then Geraldine, you can expand on that because you're the teacher. You know, how do we do the surgery? What's the surgery all about?
Sure. So the surgery is an outpatient procedure. You will have two small incisions when you leave the operating room. One will be on the right-hand side of your lower neck area, and one will be on your interclavicular area, which is right below your collarbone on the right-hand side. That's where the implantable devices will be placed underneath the skin. You will not see anything post-procedure. The procedure itself, Dr. Roscoe will do under guidance, and he will make sure that there is a stimulation and a good connection with the cuff underneath the skin prior to closing up the incisions. You'll go home the same day. There's a pretty fast recovery. We usually give over-the-counter medication, Tylenol or ibuprofen to patients, and you return to non-strenuous activities within a few days. The time that it takes for you to recover, we give you 30 days after the procedure to recover, allow everything to heal, and allow you to be feeling good. You will come into Dr. Roscoe's office or into a sleep physician's office, whichever the procedure is scheduled for as far as the activation goes, and that's where we will turn the device on for the first time, and we will set your device with parameters that are customized to your needs, and then you will go home that day at the 30-day mark with a sleep remote, and you'll have a little remote control. So your only job as the patient is to turn the device on when you go to sleep and to turn the device off when you wake up. It's also got an app that you can have on your phone. It's Bluetooth accessible, but you will be able to just simply turn it on when you go to sleep and off when you wake up. The nicest part about the implant that takes place on the hypoglossal nerve is your hypoglossal nerve does not have any sensory function. So the nerve itself is not going to be something that you're going to feel all the time. You will learn what it feels like when we are turning the device on and setting it for you, but it's not something that should awaken you at night or be uncomfortable in any way at all for you. And that device is programmed and customized throughout your treatment of therapy. So the battery life is going to last 12 to 13 years. And as you come in and progress through your therapy, whether it's on a six-month basis or an annual basis, depending on how you're feeling as the patient, we will continue to customize that device to make sure that we meet the needs to reduce that AHI, the time you stop breathing per hour, to as low as possible. An average, a normal AHI for a patient that does not have sleep apnea is 5 or less, be in that range or as close to it as possible. So that's what we will do.
Excellent. You know, with regard to these patients, I think you mentioned, again, just the surgical aspect with that, the hypoglossal nerve. And, you know, there's no sensory function, meaning that overall it's a motor nerve. And it does go ahead and it stimulates the muscle or, when it's working to do what we need it to do. So that she's right. The patients have really no feeling of something in their throat, if you will, or on their tongue, which is great to have all that done. And, you know, Geralyn, with regard to, say, the history right now, has there been any battery replacements yet for our patient population that has had this early on?
Yes. So
have you had to deal with that yet?
Excuse me. The patients that were in the clinical trial, which was back prior to 2014, we started doing those implants earlier than 2014 when we went commercial and approved by the FDA. So those patients are starting to hit their battery replacement mark. Your battery should last anywhere from 11. Some patients are going as high as 14 years. It's all based on how your therapy is set up, how long it's going to last, but you'll never be caught off guard. Every time you come into your physician's office, they can look at the programmer and they can tell you how much more battery life you have. So they will always be able to give you a good warning a year to 6 months prior to your battery being depleted, and we can replace the battery, which is just a simple outpatient procedure. We don't replace all the hardware. We only open up the incision on your chest, take out the old battery, put the new battery in, and close it up. So it's just a simple battery change, similar to how you go through if you had a pacemaker or another cardiac device, and those get replaced pretty often.
And Geralyn, is that covered by insurance, the battery replacement? Do we know that?
Yes, it is covered by insurance.
So that the patient then really doesn't have any real worries about having to be out of pocket for all this, you know, high-tech surgery and hardware, which, you know, is good.
Correct. And once a patient starts through the process, there is a patient awareness reimbursement line at Inspire Therapy, which we will offer to the patients. They can call there anytime. It operates 24 hours a day. They can call in and they will be given a secure line and they can ask any question and there will be a person assigned to them to help them through the process. So if at any time they get a bill that is suspicious or that they don't think should have happened or something is concerning them as to, you know, can I have this done because I have Inspire, those people will help them 24 hours a day.
Wonderful. So in a sense, they have a lot of technical support with people that know what they've had done. They know the hardware. They know how it's to function. They know the clinical aspect of all this. So they're talking to people that are very knowledgeable about what they've been through, correct?
That's correct. The majority of the questions that come through are patients that need an MRI and want to make sure the device is MRI compatible, which it is, and things like that, or I'm having this type of procedure, or I'm traveling overseas, are there any concerns? So those people will answer any question A to Z, and if they don't have the answer for you immediately, they will find out the answer and call you right back.
That's super. I mean, that really is, you know, we were just talking about our next week's show, you know, talking about burnout, customer service, and things like that. Geraldine, that really is customer service. So your company's to be congratulated. You know, with regard to training your company, training people to put them in the field, is that increasing, you know, because your patient population is growing now? So that overall you're training new people to come out and to come to the OR and to go ahead and help give us assistance. Is that an ongoing process as well?
So to put it in perspective, when I started almost 10 years ago, there were 8 of us that covered the country, and now there are well over 250 sales professionals that are in the country, as well as a field clinical representative that works hand-in-hand with the physicians in the operating rooms on a daily basis. So there, we went from employees of maybe 50 our first year. It's currently over 800.
Oh, my God. That's tremendous. You know, just as far as clarification, just for our listeners with regard to this device, you know, I see the patient initially. Say a surgeon sees the patient. Typically, they have been ear, nose, and throat surgeons that you have been certifying, so to speak, correct? Are there other specialties doing this procedure?
Yes. Across the board, the majority of our patients come through the sleep umbrella, so they'll either have a sleep physician that refers them then to you as the technician and the implanter, or
yeah,
they'll be seen by pulmonary, they'll be seen by family care, where they get that initial CPAP evaluation, and then they realize it's not going to work for them. And then that group of physicians will refer them to you as a specialist. And in your category, 90% of the implanters across the world are ENT physicians.
They are.
We do have a couple areas where ENTs are not prevalent, and it might be an oral maxillofacial physician or a neurosurgeon that places the device, but that's very infrequent that happens across the country.
Right.
Right now, ENT surgeons are our primary focus.
And, you know, once the ENT surgeon has placed this, we then turn the care over to the sleep doctors or the pulmonary doctors that work with, of course, your company and the patient with regard to getting this titrated, getting this customized for the patient to work, correct?
Yes, and the reason why we do that, it's not that you can't do it in an ENT office. It's just that you all are specialized and have many more different things that you need to do for other types of patients. In the sleep community, a sleep physician is obviously an expert in the world of sleep, and they've been titrating CPAP devices for so many years. It is a simple correlation to how they would titrate an Inspire device. So it just makes sense to keep it in the sleep arena and allow long-term care on an annual basis for you to see a sleep physician rather than for you to have to go back to a surgeon's office.
Got it. No, I agree with that. And, you know, our role here is to do the technical aspect of identifying the nerve, applying the hardware, so to speak, getting the generator in appropriately and making sure the patient is well healed. And I'd like to let our listeners know also, Geraldine, that, you know, when we're doing this procedure in the OR and when we have the procedure pretty much done before we close all the incisions, we do attempt to make this work or to evaluate the working of this stimulation, correct? We want to make sure that it's working at the time of implant there in the OR. So it's not something we don't know if it works or not. It'll take 30 days to find out. We know right then and there in the OR, correct?
That's a correct statement, yes. We will not close a patient's incisions until we have made sure that the device is going to be as effective as possible for that patient.
Which I think is excellent, that overall we know it's working and should work. Then it's just a matter of fine-tuning it to the patient's needs, correct?
Yes.
And, you know, when they do go, you know, we wait for 30 days to make sure they have healed. When they do go in to see the sleep doctors, the pulmonary doctors, that visit at that point is where we turn over the remote control to them, correct? We give them the remote, and then we go ahead and what? You teach them how to use it. You teach them the nuances of using it and what their body should experience, correct?
Yes, we'll have them download the patient app, which is going to answer all their frequently asked questions and give them guidance and videos to watch on their own time. We will turn the device on for the first time, and then we will teach them how to use their remote. The remote is only an up, down, on, off function, and it has a pause function. So it's very simple to use. Anybody can use it. We have a pediatric population that is able to get implanted on the Down syndrome side. We have not had any issue with anybody being able to work the remote. So we will walk you through it. And then we have a tried and true patient care pathway that takes place in every office. So no matter what sleep professional office you go into that treats Inspire patients, they're following the same algorithm of treating their patients and how they're doing their programming, when they're making changes, and how they're making changes. So it's a very tried and true process that happens across the board. And then whatever happens in the sleep office, we send that information back to Dr. Roscoe or the ENT implanter, so
yes,
everyone is on the same page with the patient care.
Excellent. You know, it's completing this cycle. And, you know, I think we have questions. Mark Mancini in the studio, what do you have for us, Mark?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I got a lot of questions, and I'll take them as this show is picking up steam and just so blessed to produce it out here in Los Angeles. But Robin, coming in from Warren, Ohio, basically says, guys, I'm listening to the show. I'm a regular listener to the show. Every week it seems to be a great topic of what you guys are talking about. But I want to know, what's the main cause of sleep amnesia? Is it excess weight, obesity? Is that the main cause of sleep amnesia? Great question.
Are we talking about, yeah, Mark, do we want to clarify that? Are we talking about sleep apnea or sleep amnesia? Do we want to clarify that question? Because I think there is a difference in that.
Yeah, I'll get that clarified momentarily.
Go ahead.
Let me bring another one to the forefront, and this is Steve from Corvallis, Oregon. He says, what causes a sleep apnea? Is it a lack of oxygen?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. Geraldine, you want to talk about that a little bit as well?
Sure. So the sleep apnea obstructive, there's two different types. There's a central sleep apnea, which is a neurological function, and there's obstructive sleep apnea, which is a mechanical function. In obstructive sleep apnea patients, when you are sleeping, your airway will collapse on its own. So when you're awake and you're breathing, your brain and your airway and the nervous system are all talking to each other, and they know, take a breath, and it keeps you, you know, alive and functioning. But when you go to sleep, there's some sort of disconnect, and we don't exactly know the disconnect. We just know it's a nervous system disconnect with that cranial nerve, that your brain and your mechanical function of opening the airway, the nerves stop talking to each other. So your airway will collapse, and that's when people end up feeling like they're gasping for breath and they stop breathing. Some people never gasp for breath. Some people never even realize they have sleep apnea until they start getting other symptoms during the day of daytime sleepiness, falling asleep when they're driving, patient quality of life, you know, falls. Not able to work properly, or their cognitive functions are dissipating. So any of those type of side effects that you exhibit during the day sometimes will lead you to get a sleep apnea diagnosis.
And, yeah, I mean, I think the important thing, which you mentioned, Geraldine, is that the cause of sleep apnea, you're right, there's the central cause, which is within the brain, but the peripheral cause has to do with tissue collapse of the airway. that the air is unable to go come in and then go out. And that's where we get in with this hypoglossal nerve stimulation. So hopefully that'll answer her question. Go ahead, Mark.
Yep. Well, I got Robin clarified on its sleep apnea and what's a common cause. Could it be weight and obesity?
Sure. Geraldine, you want to take that one?
Sure. Many times patients that are on the obese side or heavier than what they would like will have sleep apnea. It's not a direct correlation, but it is something that goes along side by side with sleep apnea. So a lot of times in the sleep apnea patients, once your sleep apnea is treated, other health issues that you might be experiencing, whether it's cardiovascular issues, AFib is a big precursor, diabetes, obesity, those things will all start to get better and improve. Because what you may or may not realize is if you do not sleep well and your body is not able to heal and function the way that it needs to at night, everything else kind of starts to hurt, whether it's a cardiovascular issue that comes to fruition, whether it's an AFib, you develop AFib, you start to gain weight, you just don't feel well because you're not sleeping well and your body's not able to heal. And the critical time for healing is when you are sleeping. So all those things fall into place. So when you see Dr. Roscoe or any of the providers, you may also find out, you know, your symptoms you might be telling them about is, you know, you're not feeling well, you're falling asleep at the wheel, you're not able to work. Those are key signals that Dr. Ross will listen for to know that, hey, we need to put you through a sleep study. We need to see what's happening when we're not there at night with you.
It's excellent. Excellent answer. And I think, you know, you've brought up also the sleep study, you know, that needs to be done for these patients when we're trying to get them prepared to have this hypoglossal nerve. So go ahead, Mark.
Let me take one more and I'll give it back to you. Bill coming in from Lynn, Mass says he has a problem sleeping at night. He has to take pills. Is that a good thing, or when you get hooked on these things, after a while, you just become desensitized to it? I've heard, you know, and just to jump in on that, I've heard people take, you know, stuff because they can't sleep. Luckily, I've never had to do that. At my age, you just drop right away. But I've heard people, you know, go through that, docs, and I don't know what the cause of it is or why they need to take it, but that's a great question coming out of Massachusetts.
Yeah, Geraldine, do you want to touch that a little bit if you can, and I'll jump in also.
So I can touch on base just on a little bit from the Inspire correlation, but since I'm not a medical professional, I don't want to comment too much on it. But the issues with falling asleep sometimes are more insomnia related or a restless leg related or other sleep disordered related versus a obstructive sleep apnea or central sleep apnea. Those patients usually don't have trouble falling asleep because their bodies are so exhausted they fall asleep very quickly. But there are other sleep related disorders that you may need to have looked at depending on what your sleep professional guides you to.
Very good. It's a you know, that's a very broad topic with regard to that and using medication for sleep. There has to be another cause, indeed, why you're not able to sleep. Either it could be drug-related, medication-related, could be a change in your sleeping cycle. Maybe you work shifts and your shifts are being changed on a weekly or monthly basis. There's a lot of things going on with this. And indeed, I think, you know, the answer is not an easy answer. We have a remedy if there's sleep apnea involved, but you may want to consult your sleep professional to go through your medications, your health history, and to make sure there's nothing else that could be corrected to get you sleeping at night and to get you off those medications. So would that be a fair statement, Geraldine? We'd like to get them off of those things and get them sleeping without that need.
Yes, and what I would say is it's important that you see a sleep professional when you're feeling that way or you're experiencing that. There are so many different things that play into why your sleep could be disrupted, and they really are experts in identifying how they can help you from minimal holistic applications the whole way up to medication, surgery, or CPAP, Inspire, oral appliance, or that type of remedy. So I would strongly suggest that you look for a sleep professional that could help you.
Very good. Mr. Mancini.
Well, I'm going to bring it back to you guys. I'll take more questions, and I'll see you guys in about 15, 20 minutes.
You know, Geraldine, I'd like to let our listeners know as well, you know, next Saturday we have Susan Orimoto talking about burnout in the workplace. She is a board-certified holistic health provider and wellness coach that kind of talks about that, trying to keep your health in good shape. Geraldine, you know, with regard to, you know, we talked about indications and where we were initially doing the hypoglossal nerve stimulator, they have changed somewhat for children, for Down's type patients. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. So we have approval by the FDA to implant pediatric Down's patients, the ages 7 to 18. And those patients are a unique population, and those children obviously have other issues because of their Down syndrome diagnosis. And one of the severe side effects that they have based on their anatomical makeup is that they have trouble sleeping. Unfortunately, they're not, most of them are not able to use a CPAP just because of all of their Downs-related issues. And so Inspire was approved for the Down syndrome population. We currently have had great success. In fact, Jesse, who was our first patient, just actually rang the bell at the New York Stock Exchange for the anniversary of Inspire therapy. So that was a great thing. He's doing very, very well. He's now 18 years old, so he's 7 years post-implant and doing very, very well. But the nicest part is the parents can turn on the device using the remote. They turn it on. The children go to sleep. And it not only helps the child and allows the child to sleep well throughout the night and become healthy and they're not tired during the day, it also gives the parents a peace of mind, because what people sometimes don't see is the parents are concerned that their children are stopping breathing throughout the night. And with the Down's patients, the patient might not be able to communicate as much about what's happening to them, and they're stopping breathing and they're choking and they're concerned. Now your parents, as parents, you're up all night worried about your children. So it also gives a peace of mind to the parents, allowing their children to sleep throughout the night simply by turning the device on and turning the device off whenever the patient wakes up in the morning. So that's been the biggest blessing, is getting to implant that population of patients.
And, you know, I just, interestingly, clinically, these patients are complicated. Many of them are hypothyroid. They have floppy airway problems. They have craniofacial abnormalities with regard to growth and development. And so they're set up for obstruction. So, indeed, as she had mentioned, they're really difficult to have these children use CPAP. And it's a real problem for a family, but also the patient. And Geraldine, how did we start to study that population?
So Chris Hartnick out of Mass General brought it to our attention about 8 years ago now, that he would like to study it. He felt there was going to be significant impact on that patient population. So he started a clinical trial that then we incorporated seven facilities across the country, UPMC Children's in Pittsburgh being one of them, CHOP in Philadelphia, Cincinnati Children's. They were all involved in implanting them during the clinical trial, which then led to the indication being granted by the FDA earlier this year.
So that, you know, at this point, if we do have Down's population that are seeing us, and again, do we do the same type of protocol, meaning do we do a sleep study? Do we do a DICE? Do we, you know, have to do these things, or can we bypass those and go directly to the Inspire insertion?
No, you're still going to follow the same protocol. We still want to make sure they fit within the guidelines and make sure there's a mechanical function that's causing their issues and that Inspire is going to work for them. And then there are pediatric specialized ENTs, mostly at the children's hospitals, that are then trained for this specific Down syndrome patient population, and they do those implants. So as clinicians, we would tell any clinician across the board, if you have that patient, we want you to send them to the pediatric specialist.
And, you know, just on the equipment, is the same or is it specially sized for this population?
No, it's exactly the same equipment as you use in your OR. Exactly the same.
And the same generator would be used, battery, et cetera.
Yes, correct.
Well, wonderful. You know, Geraldine, now you have data, and I think I would like to let our listeners know, you know, how has this Inspire improved these apneas, these hypopneas? You know, as far as people pre-op, post-op, and now several years follow-up, what have been the findings? What has been the success for your company?
Sure.
Go ahead.
So,
give us some.
Let's talk about the AHI, that apnea hypopnea index, the number of times you stop breathing per hour. So across all implants, our data shows that there is a 79% reduction in your score. So if you come into Dr. Roscoe's office and you have a AHI score of 30, after Inspire, we're seeing that it's at about 6.2 post-activation and usage of Inspire. Our goal at Inspire is to reduce that AHI number, no matter what it is, by at least 50%. However, we will not stop at that 50% mark. We want to get you as close to that 5 or less mark as possible. So there are a multitude of different programming changes that we can make to help you get to that score. Snoring, I know that people always have a lot of concern with snoring, and is that actually sleep apnea or is it snoring? Snoring is a side effect of a multitude of issues, but it does correlate with sleep apnea. And patients with Inspire, 83% of the patients had snoring before they got Inspire, and after Inspire, only about 10% are still experiencing some sort of snoring, but not to the level that they were having it pre-implant. So that's another thing that usually we see a lot of success with. The greatest thing, though, is if you have an Apple iPhone, which most of us do, if you look at the Apple information, Apple has a 91% satisfaction rate. So users across the country, 91% are happy with their Apple iPhone. Inspire is very, very proud of the fact that when we did their patient survey and we survey every implanted patient, that 94% of them came back and said they would redo and have the procedure again. They have no issues with it, no qualms with it, and they are not unsatisfied in any way, shape, or form. We do different than CPAP. If you look at CPAP information, you're required to use a CPAP 4 hours per night in order for you to get usage data off of that CPAP machine. Inspire's a little bit different. We ask you to turn it on when you go to sleep, and you turn it off when you wake up. So we want you to use it all night, every night. So our adherence data, which is the amount of hours our patients use per average per night, is about 5.5 hours, between 5.5 and 5.7 hours per night. And we always will ask you how many hours you sleep, and we will look at you as an individual. So if you say you sleep 7 hours, I want to see 7 hours worth of data on your printout when we look at your adherence data. You need to make sure the device is on all night, every night.
Wow, that's excellent, excellent reporting. And, you know, with regard to just, you know, we look at your organization, we look at Apple as well, and the question that one asks is, why is that satisfaction so high? You know, what's the why here? How did you get there? How did you go ahead and plan to have such great success? How did your company do that, Geraldine?
I think because we always put the patient first. So in everything that we do, no matter which area of the company it is, no matter what position you have within the company, Tim Herbert and Glenn Nelson, who was our initial president, who has now passed away, everything that we do focuses on patient first. So we want to make sure our patients are feeling better. We want to make sure that our patients are happy. We want to make sure if there is an issue that we address it immediately. So under no circumstance is anybody in the company not going to put that patient first. So that's why we have got the 24-hour hotline. You've got a territory manager that is responsible for you, and then you have clinical professionals that are assigned to your account to make sure your patients are taken care of. But at no time can anybody pick up the phone, make a phone call, whether it's to me, to Tim Herbert, who is our president, to our patient hotline. It does not matter. We will all stop what we're doing and make sure that patient is taken care of. And like I said before, there are so many different programming parameters that if you come back to the office at the 60-day mark, 90-day mark, or 10-year mark, and you say, you know what, I was feeling great, but now I'm not feeling so great, we're going to look at exactly what's happening, and we're going to come up with a solution for you. So at no time do you ever get rid of the Inspire personnel that works with you. Faces might change, names might change, but the whole mentality and the whole focus on our patients will never change.
Wonderful. You're to be commended. You know, I think also part of the why, I think, is the training that goes on through your professionals that, you know, you have doing this procedure. And, you know, when we do the workup for the patient, it's not helter-skelter. You know, we have to be, you know, we have our goals here that we want to meet. You know, we have to know about that BMI. We have to know about the sleep study. We have to know about the DICE. So we're putting our patients through several qualifying rounds, if you will, to make sure the device will work, that we'll get to that satisfaction level. So I think I've always been amazed and very pleased with, you know, knowing that I'm going to help the patients that come in to see me, especially because of the workup that we're doing. And, you know, indeed, just to let you know, I've been with you for probably 2 years now. And, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing the people that want to have this procedure done, that know about you, that go ahead and are looking for solutions. So I think your company is filling a real void in this healthcare system. You know, the other thing that I want to let our listeners know, Geralyn, when, you know, as far as just logistically, when one, they've been implanted, they also have been titrated, they have the remote. Exactly when they lay down, when does this device kick in? When does, you know, again, that hypoglossal nerve get stimulated? Can you help me with that?
Sure. So it's going to be different for every patient. And the reason I say that is because when you come into the office and we're going to program your device, I'm going to ask you how long it takes you to fall asleep. And if you tell me it takes you 10 to 15 minutes, I'm going to program your device to turn on at about the 25-minute mark. So I want you to have enough time to fall asleep, but I don't want the device not to be on as soon as possible. So there's a little bit of a game that we play that first 30 to 60 days that you're using the device that you might say, you know what, I'm falling asleep really, really quickly. So then when you come back for your visit, we can change that. If you say, you know what, it's taking me 20, 30, maybe a little bit longer to fall asleep, we might program that a little bit longer. So your device will turn on whenever it's programmed to turn on, and then it will stay on throughout the entire night until the time you get up. So I'll say, you know, can you please tell me how long you usually sleep? If you say 8 hours, I program it for 9. I want that device to be on for every minute that you are sleeping. I do not want it turning off early, because if it turns off early, then you are not getting any treatment during the time it's turned off. So we'd rather leave it on longer, and then you can turn it off when you wake up. Once you wake up, because you don't necessarily feel the stimulation, should you leave the house and go to work and forget to turn the device off, there is an automatic shut off on the device. So the device will automatically turn off. So you will not be going throughout your entire day without, it will automatically shut itself off if you forget to turn it off.
Geralyn, the device itself is this remote control. That's the only on-off system that we do have for this, correct?
As of today, yes. It will be in the future Bluetooth, but right now, yes.
Okay, that's it. And, you know, as far as future, I was going to mention, what's on the horizon now for this? What can be improved? You know, what are you looking to do now with your technology, with your success? What's the next step?
There will be some new generations of the device coming out, probably somewhere third quarter, fourth quarter of next year. We're currently updating our Bluetooth technology and the patient app and the interaction of that. And then we have SleepSync, which is a online iCloud platform that allows the sleep physician to speak directly to the patient's device. So, for instance, if I'm a sleep physician and I need to know, did my patient use the device all night last night? Or is my patient turning off the device or pausing it? Or did they forget to turn it on completely? I can go into the computer system and link up via Bluetooth to the patient's app and see how the patient is utilizing the therapy and are they having good success. So there are a lot of interactive platforms that are coming to fruition as well as being enhanced throughout the next to 9 months across the board that you'll see.
So a lot of this is real-time data. We can do real-time adjustments, et cetera. You know, I just received an email from a patient that is looking and considering to have an Inspire, and she is saying, well, what happens if I gain 15 or 20 pounds? Or what if I get pregnant? What happens with this device if I have it implanted? Can you help
us? As far as the pregnancy indication, we don't have a current pregnancy indication, so that would be evaluated by the OBGYN. It is similar to any other neuromodulation therapy, which there's a whole classification of them that patients have them for: pain pumps, cardiac pacemakers, inner stim devices for urinary and fecal incontinence, deep brain stimulators for Parkinson's. So they are evaluated across the board, but every physician is going to need to evaluate your patient specifically. If you had to have it removed for some reason, the Inspire device can come out without any issue. We don't alter anatomy during the procedure, so it is a removable device if it was necessary, but it should probably not be necessary.
Not be. And, you know, again, with regard to MRI compatibility, indeed, this is MRI compatible, that we don't need to worry about our patients not being able to have that diagnostic testing.
Correct. There's an MRI protocol. So if you had a patient and you called me and said they needed to get an MRI, I would give them a specific MRI protocol based on Teslas that are used during the MRI procedure that we request them to use. And we have an MRI hotline that if that provider would like to speak directly with one of our engineering specialists, they can call the MRI hotline to get more information.
Thank you. Geraldine, we're going back to the studio in L.A. Mr. Mancini, I know you have more questions. Go ahead.
Yeah, Frank from Vail, Colorado coming in. He said snoring. Is that a form of sleep apnea? Because snoring's a big part. My wife basically says I snore a lot. I'm not aware of it because she hears it and I'm sound asleep.
Sure. And Geraldine, do you want to pick that up? I can help that too.
Sure. So snoring could be a side effect and correlated to your sleep apnea. You definitely want to see an ENT specialist to have it evaluated. Sometimes patients, if they haven't had their tonsils out, sometimes that can be an issue. It can be a tissue issue. It can be a collapsibility issue. So any of those things can do it. If you did have sleep apnea and you do have snoring, as I said before, if you get an Inspire device, your snoring will most likely recede. But there's obviously no guarantees
sure.
with that. But Dr. Roscoe, I'll let you expand on other options for
yeah,
snoring
thank
patients.
You. You know, as far as snoring has to do with the vibration of tissues in the pharynx. And, you know, we have the soft palate, and we have that little tissue that hangs down called the uvula. Also, the tonsillar area. These are very pliable areas. And when we're going ahead with negative and positive, a negative-positive pressure, it puts these tissue in a vibratory status. That's where the snoring comes from. It's upper airway. And, again, that tells us there's an awful lot of resistance in the airway, so that typically if one is snoring, they need to get a sleep study. They probably do have either a mild apnea or maybe something worse, but, indeed, their airway is having a constant change of high to low pressures overall. So they need to see their sleep doctor. I think Geraldine had given us that advice as well. But I think we need to see a sleep doctor and probably get a sleep study. That indicates they potentially do have an apnea problem. Mark?
Good questions coming in. Gary from Duluth, Minnesota basically says, what's normal? If you go to sleep quickly, or you have a hard time sleeping, what's in between this? This is an interesting topic I'm listening to today, and I'm just trying to get a read on it. Sometimes I'll go to sleep struggling, and then other times I can just go right out. Is that caused by fatigue and just worn down?
Do you have any insight into that, Geraldine?
I'm going to defer to you, Dr. Roscoe. There's
sure.
numerous things. I know I don't sleep very well, but stress causes, causes issues with sleep. I know that, you know,
sure.
people, you could,
well,
if you drink a lot of alcohol before you go to bed, sometimes you sleep better, eating a heavy meal, all those type of things. But there's so many different issues.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. As far as, you know, people, sleep is a very complex function of our body and our brain. And again, there's a lot of chemical that are released within our body for sleep. And again, you have to look at the whole patient. And again, what medications? You know, what about the stress you're under? What about your exercise level? You know, et cetera. Are there bladder issues here as well? So there's a lot going on for us to sleep and to remain asleep. And I would say, rather than trying to summarize it in two or three sentences, let's get a good evaluation. And I think I've always said on this show that overall, let's not skimp on your health. If you're having a problem, opinion of a professional that can help you and make the quality of your life better. Go ahead, Mark.
I'll throw one more with about 3 minutes and change left. Albert from Poway jumping in. He says, I don't eat past 7. And the reason why is the digest the food and everything, because if I eat after that, I feel bloated and I have a hard time sleeping. That's a great question.
Want me to take it, Geraldine?
Sure.
Sure. You know, we talk about eating. You know, we do worry, you know, as far as bedtime, one of the rules that we like to use with our patients is not to eat or drink within 2 hours of you going to sleep. So if you're going to sleep between 9 and 10 o'clock, let's close our mouth in our kitchen about 6:30, 7 o'clock. The reason is that it takes about 2 hours or so for food to be digested in the stomach, then passed into the small bowel, which is the duodenum, and then small intestine, then getting into the colon. As long as there's activity in the stomach to digest, there's a chance that your stomach is making acid. It's contracting, and it won't empty sometimes as quickly due to fatigue. You get bloated. So the one thing to do as far as our health care here is let's close the kitchen at about 6:30, 7 o'clock. No chips, no ice cream, no pie, no popcorn while you're laying in bed watching TV. Let your stomach relax, digest, empty, and you may even go to sleep a lot sooner and earlier without the bloating. And again, you'd probably also be far better with weight if you're not eating that late at night. So it's something I think we need to improve and, you know, clean up our eating hygiene to allow our body to do what it needs to do. But you want your body to rest at night, and I think Geraldine has alluded to that. We want you to rest. That means your stomach also. Go ahead, Mark.
As we wrap this thing up, 2 minutes and some change, we can put a final nail into this one. Boy, you guys covered a lot. And after you do that, let everybody know where they can reach either one of you.
Sure, Geraldine, go ahead.
So if you want more information on Inspire Sleep Apnea, sleep in general, you can always visit us at inspiresleep.com, and you can go on there. There's qualifying tests. You can get your questions answered. You can chat with ambassadors, which our patient ambassador program are people who have already been implanted with the device to you either via the computer or even make a cell phone call to you to answer any of your questions. But whatever we can do to assist in helping you on your journey, Inspire Sleep is here for you.
Beautiful. And, you know, I'd like to say we have a very good discussion. We've had Geraldine on before. She's very knowledgeable. I'm very pleased that I'm able to work with a company like this. They're a good company all the way around. We've been giving good patient care. And I think it's something, if one has an apnea issue, they are not tolerating their CPAP, then see your sleep doctor or your local ear, nose, and throat doctor. This is an excellent alternative to the improvement of your health. Go ahead, Mr. Mancini.
Well, I'll tell you, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you in Pittsburgh. It's just amazing that each and every week with the great guest you bring through here to cover a lot of broad topics, my friend, and I can't wait till next week as well.
Well, thank you. And, again, our listeners can get a hold of me, GJRMD308@outlook.com. Our phone number, if you would like, is 814-375-0455. I would be happy to entertain questions, comments. I would be happy to go ahead and see patients for this type of a procedure. So thank you very much. Geraldine White, thank you and your company. Mr. Mancini, thank you for an excellent production today.
Well, so blessed, and I can't wait for next week's as well with Susan Yamamoto coming in here. Thank you guys for listening. For the docs in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing in Los Angeles. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. We'll be back next Saturday, same time across these airways. Have a blessed one, a safe one, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Thank you.